Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. This is Tim Hayes. On this show, they call me Dr. Tim. I'm a psychologist, and I'm sitting in for Michael and Jeannie and hoping that Jeannie will be on soon and that she's on the switchboard. Michael and Jeannie are in Sweden, and I think they're there with Peter. And this is Mind Shifters Radio, where we're here to help you learn about and apply the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness to your life. This is a technology which allows
you... Dr. Tim, you've got me.
Oh, hello, Michael Rice.
How do you be, young man?
I'm doing quite well. I was just about to launch into an intro.
We're sitting here in Sweden. Go ahead.
You're just sitting there where?
I said we're sitting here as the sun goes down in Sweden. It's getting dark at 7 o'clock in the evening here, and the sun is setting. We've had a beautiful day in Sweden. We actually went out and kind of played tourist with Peter today and got to see the city and got a little more acquainted with it. Tomorrow we're going to do a little more of the same. So we had an awesome day, sunshine, a little on the chilly side. It's in the low 30s, low to mid-30s, and then later in the day it warmed up into the 40s a little bit. So it's a pretty nice day.
Is Jeannie there and on the switchboard?
So it's exciting in your world. Jeannie is here on the switchboard. I don't know if she can speak to us. Jeannie?
Well, just so she can alert you if someone has their hand up.
Yes, she's... not able to speak to us, but she is on the switchboard, and if we have a caller, she'll alert us. Do you want to go ahead with an opening and an intro?
Well, you haven't done one in a while. I'd be happy to defer
to
you if you're feeling moved
to. I have some thoughts to share.
Please do.
Okay, cool. Well, I kind of had the thought of bouncing off of the end of our show yesterday where we talked a little bit about speech but really didn't explain much about it, and it's a topic that most people are not acquainted with. They're not aware that their words are revealing their innermost thoughts all the time. You know, sometimes in a workshop, and I'm sure you've had the experience when you're working with a client, and you start to just reflect their words back to them, and they're shocked at how you know so much about them, and they have no idea that their own words have been revealing exactly what's going on in the mind. And so we do work with a thing we call regulatory speech, as you mentioned yesterday. And when we listen carefully to our words, you know, Shakespeare gave us a really good clue about this regulatory speech business when he quoted, or when he said, "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." And our words are reflective of our own unconscious dynamics, the things that remain beneath the surface. So the person who says, "Well, you know, that really didn't upset me at all, is in a state of denial. Their words are reflecting that what's in the mind is upset, and that they've denied their upset, so they're not aware that it's there. But of course, their language betrays them. And so if I just start to really listen to exactly what my words are, when we recognize that words are reflections of the firing of brain cells, we don't talk about things that are not firing in brain cells. We always use language that comes from the hidden depths of the mind. And so when I recognize that, if I simply watch my words, and oftentimes when people start to become acquainted with what we call regulatory speech, they become quite frustrated when you point out what they're telling about themselves, because their hidden mind is starting to show up, or is being reflected back to them by the reflection of their speech. And so in that frustrated state, oftentimes people will become quite agitated and upset, and they'll, many times over the years, I've heard people just kind of, sort of vomit out, well, why don't you just let me say what I want to say? Why don't you stop interrupting me and just let me get it out? And you know that I didn't really mean that, when I've reflected back somebody's words. And what I know is that we always are using words that reflect the content of brain cells. I use an example of, here we are, we're in Sweden, and on Saturday morning we fly to Denmark. I would not be saying, we're not flying to China on Saturday, unless somewhere in brain cells was some thought about flying to China. There'd be no need nor reason to mention 5,000 different places in the world that I'm not going, when I am going to one place. But if I do mention a place that, quote unquote, I'm not planning on going, it's because that place, that set of brain cells is firing, that's reflecting in my language about some connection to what it is that's going on in my life. So when I say that I'm not upset about something, what I'm really telling myself is that at the hidden level of my mind, there's some upset. I'm not pained by that at all, says that there's pain in that part of my mind. Well, I'm not going to do this. And you listen to the politicians, and when you understand regulatory speech, you know exactly where they're going. And when they tell you about how, we're going to pass this new bill, but this new bill isn't meant to control people at all, then you know exactly where that politician is going and exactly what that politician wants to do. And so having the insight into one's own speech, one's own language, and sometimes when people start to get a sense of this regulatory speech idea, they, in their frustration, want someone to tell them, well, just tell me the right words to say. And the whole idea of understanding regulatory speech is not about saying the right words. It's about recognizing what's going on in my own unconscious that I reveal to myself through my words. And if I'm off base with something that's conscious with my speech that reflects my unconscious, then the reason for becoming aware through my regulatory speech of what's really going on is so that I can become acquainted with and clean up my own unconscious dynamics. It's not about saying it right. It's about touching into what's really there and always simply letting my words flow without censoring them. And when I do, I'll oftentimes reveal to myself things that I've been hiding, sometimes for a long, long time. So this understanding of regulatory speech is a powerful tool to have, because my mind in avoidance can be quite a trickster in keeping parts of my own mind and dynamics that are going on inside of me hidden. So it's a wonderful tool to have, a wonderful awareness to have, and puts us in touch with things that otherwise just are hidden. And if you look back into the ancient scriptures where they understood how all of this worked, you hear them saying things like, nothing will remain hidden, everything will be made known in the light of day. And oftentimes the first indicator of something that I'm unconsciously about creating in my life will show up in my language. And if it's something that I'd rather not be dealing with, it's a whole lot easier to become aware of it as it shows up in my language and and I get to clean it up there rather than waiting till it manifests and bites me. It certainly is a much easier process to touch in early, clean it up, and move on with my life. And, you know, tied in with this whole understanding is that the fact that we are made in the image and likeness of the Creator, and that we are creators. And if we listen carefully to our speech and we are creating things unconsciously, our language will simply show us that. We do a whole workshop called On Creating Consciously, and it's about getting in touch with the conscious creative process and moving forward in our worlds with that process. So does that resonate anything for you, or anything happening in your world about themes? By the way, I'm suspecting that Rex might be there. They're in the prison today. Jeannie, I just thought of that. Is Rex by any chance on the show?
Well,
he may be reporting, and if he is, he needs to be back in soon. Go ahead.
Let her check, but when I was talking to Michelle last night, she indicated that the schedule had changed a bit and that they may need to check in tomorrow because they had switched the times a bit.
I see. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Good.
So,
cool. So any themes or anything to share from your end, Tim?
Well, I would just like to congratulate you on that very clear, at least to my ears, description of the process. And it's one of the key pieces I keep running into with people when they say, all right, well, then just tell me what you want me to say. And it takes a while for me to get them to understand I'm not criticizing. I'm trying to help them see what their own words have revealed. So I don't want them to change their speech. I want them to use their speech to shine a light on what their mind is already doing that they are not able to see with their conscious mind, and get to work shining the light on the unconscious and resolving the conflicts and the traumatic energy and the turmoil that's hidden there, so they can actually change their experience of life moment to moment, so they can get a clearer vision of not only what's going on inside of them, but then a clearer vision of the world they're living in and their true nature as this energy of love. So it's go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think one of the things that reflects, and of course I've had that experience too, of people thinking and feeling like, well, you're just correcting me, you're interfering with me. And I think that what that reveals is a power person dynamic from childhood, when, you know, a power person was always there correcting, and pointing out regulatory speech has nothing whatsoever to do with correcting, it has to do with revealing. But many people who have unresolved issues about being corrected feel like they're being corrected. You know, they're right back to, you know, maybe 4 years old, where the power person was always on top of them and nothing they could do, nothing they could say was right. And all of that frustration, and oftentimes I've seen it many times, just pure rage comes up because the revealing that's done for that person translates in their minds to correction rather than revealing. And all we want to do with the regulatory speech is use it as a tool for revealing what it is that we've hidden from ourselves. And oftentimes there's a lot of pain and trauma in what we've hidden from ourselves. So it can seem like the person who's offering the feedback is at the root of the pain and the trauma, as opposed to simply revealing, well, you know, take a look, have a look here. Just, you know, look inside on a deeper level at your own mind, and you may be very pleasantly surprised when you see what's there, because as you become acquainted with it, then it is your opportunity to correct if you choose to. And Jeannie tells me that that Mark is on the line and wants to say hello, so let's tap in and say hello to Mark. Mark, welcome. We haven't heard your voice in a while.
Well, good afternoon here, and good evening to you.
Thank you. Nice to hear your voice. How do you be?
Doing great. I'm good, and the family is good. I continue to be pleasantly surprised at all of the development that's happening, and it's pretty ironic. I look back on the first intensive I went to, which was April of 2012, and how I came home and wanted to apply all those teachings, not only for myself, but to really impose them upon the family. And there was a tremendous amount of resistance. But over the years, as I learned that the focus is on me, over the year, the focus is on me and change me and the rest will change, that's really what's occurred. And so I just see my children handling situations that would have been crises situations not too long ago, you know, in the last 6 months or so, and now saying, hey, Dad, I'm dealing with this, you know, can you support me? And they're not using the word can you support me as directly as we might, but that's what they're asking for. And then having the tools as a father to support them is tremendous. And that's a flavor of why I was calling today. I have a unique opportunity unfolding in the school that my children go to. It's a private school, grade school. And I've been asked by the principal for some advice because as great as a school as it is, they've fallen on a challenge where enrollment has been down. And they shifted from a community-based environment to more of a transactional-based environment to try to get people to come in. And so he's been asking me my input, and one of my ideas is to bring this work into the school, which would help the teachers and the children, but also offer it to the parents. And so I wanted to ask...
How awesome that would be.
Wouldn't that be? And I wanted to ask you about a couple things. One, I know you brought this into the prisons. I was curious if there's any insights from that experience that you and Rex have had, or if there's any experience that you've had bringing it to the school, and how that, and I would just love to be quiet now and listen to what you have to say about it.
Well, you know, going into a school system, whether we go to a kindergarten or a university or, as you say, to a prison, you know, we're right back to simply dealing with human beings or, in many cases, where there is hostility or fear, non-humans. And so the restoration of human life is the same. Whatever arena we go into, it's identical. And one of the things that I've always found to be true is that when you can present the possibility to someone of where they can go as true human beings, especially if human life has been blotted out of them by their hostilities and fears, there's usually great enthusiasm for moving there at first. And then there's the resistance phase and the resistance of, well, what you're really telling me is that I'm going to need to look at me. I'm going to have to change me. I'm not right. And that brings many challenges to people as they touch into the dynamics that have been previously hidden from themselves. And so as you've seen me do many times in the intensive, I turn to the board and say all of the above. You know, every tool that we've got are the tools to teach. And the starting point, of course, would be the forgiveness work, is to show people the possibility of going within themselves when there's hostility or fear and being restored to the truth of human life, the active presence of love that we're designed to be. And I always find, you know, we met with a group of Aramaic-speaking peoples here in Sweden just a couple of nights ago. We're waiting to hear confirmation on whether or not will be doing a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop for them tomorrow. And one of the fastest ways that I've found to get somebody's attention these days is that question that we ask at the opening of the Why workshop: how many have ever held a newborn child? And, you know, in a classroom, I think about a particular group of people we had at Laws of Living about maybe 4 years ago. And there were two young men there who were 13, 14 years of age. They had both come from inner city schools in Nashville, Tennessee. And one of them in particular was a very angry young man. He was the son of a very famous musician. If I mention this musician's name, everybody would know who this musician was. And his father had abandoned him, and his mother lived in a world that was pretty difficult, pretty tough. And when he came to Heartland, there was just a huge amount of rage. But a really powerful turning point for this young man was when we asked that question: how many have ever held a newborn child? And this young man had a sibling that was, if I remember correctly, was about 9 years younger than he was. He was 13 or 14. And to watch the transformation that took place in him, and it kind of became a real anchor point for him through the rest of the intensive, because as he thought about his baby sister being born and the first time he saw her, and what an awesome experience it was for him, his first real direct experience in memory, at least, of the presence of human life. It took this enraged young man into such a soft, sweet, beautiful place that it changed the rest of his experience in the intensive. And so that question about human life, and we did this, of course, in the meeting we had the other night. We had about a dozen or so people. And when we asked, especially the people who were in the group that spoke Aramaic, each of them became kind of the quizzical look on their faces became their expression. And each of them kind of threw their hands up, because, of course, we're speaking English, and these are native Aramaic speakers. And, you know, each of them were like, well, they would just raise their hands heavenward and say, you know, there is no expression. There are no words that can describe that. And when you get people into tapping into that energy, and it's not, you know, it's not an intellectual experience when they do that. It's a direct experience of human life. And you point out that that is human life, and that that's really the ultimate goal of this work, is the restoration of human life with its genius, with its compassion, with all of the faculties that come with it. And you point out, you know, this one man who we met with the other night, but how could we function that way in a world that's so insane, this secular world with all its hostilities, its fears, its controls, its manipulations? And, you know, as I answered him and said, well, it's not the world that's the problem. It's what you've bought into in you that blots out human life in you. And your forgiveness work is about removing that human life until you are back to that sweet connected space of the true being that you are. And that's where all of the resolution of life's problems lie. It was just like, you know, it's a huge aha moment for most people. And so that's one of the places that, you know, that I work to move in the direction of whenever I'm introducing this information to a new group of people. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a group of physicists or a group of theologians. In the end, everybody knows what human life is. And most everybody recognizes that it's been obliterated. And the invitation to restore it is an invitation into the work. Does that fit with your question, Mark?
Yeah,
it's interesting. Does that fit with your question, Mark?
Yeah, let me take my headset off. I was getting some feedback.
Yeah, that fits with my question. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right, great. Yeah, the one of the things that that's a perfect kickoff, I think, to the meeting is helping establish that so that, and also one of the things that we'll be doing is I'm going to be asking them questions about that vision so that it's being defined by him in terms of the possibilities of where he thinks the school can go. And then using this as a vehicle to bridge that gap. It's like, okay, well, you want, because I found that in businesses too, where businesses have visions and they have values to get that vision fulfilled. And these tools are perfect for supporting them as a leadership team or whatever it might be to start moving themselves so that, and as they move themselves, they're going to move toward achieving what they desire because they're getting out of their way, all the obstacles and things in the way. So I think that starting out with that is going to be really great, and focusing on the possibilities and the recognition that we don't have to know necessarily how it's all going to happen. In fact, it's unlikely that we would. But we do want to paint the picture of what we desire, that desired state, and then allow it to unfold. And these tools, I think, would help everybody do that.
Another piece that you can point out in that educational model that, you know, doesn't necessarily fit so well in business is to point out the definition of education, and that the word educate comes from educare, which means to draw out. It does not mean, you know, as usual, the world's got it backward. Education does not mean, you know, you have an empty head, I'm going to stuff it full of information that I know that you need to have, and you'll get to pass my course if you can spit back all the right answers. That's indoctrination. That's not education. And the word educare is to bring that human, point out what the human being is, and then the job of the educator is to bring that human out, because when that human being comes into full expression in their lives, then we have genius, then we have all the capabilities that anybody could ever want. And it's quite the opposite of the way the world works. You might have a conversation with Brea as well. I know that you're working with Brea in some of the things that you're developing. And you know, Brea was back, let's see, I think Brea was probably about 7 or 8 the first time I went into one of her classrooms and presented this work in the classroom to the teachers and to the students. And then, you know, there was a point when she was probably about 13 that she came, maybe 14, that she came to Heartland and did Laws of Living and took another level of it. So she might be one, you know, having recently, as a young woman, gone through as a child, being introduced to this work through the school system that she was part of, and then, you know, touching back into the work several times through her developing young life, that she may also be a great consultant to you in helping this door to open, perhaps even being part of a presentation to the school.
Awesome. Great input, and I welcome that. I'll connect with Bray on that. And that definition of education with educare, meaning educare, and is phenomenal. I'm going to use that as well. Thank you.
I would also suggest tapping into Julie Haverstick and see if she has any input.
Yeah, Julie, thank you. Julie came to mind when I was thinking about this, that that potentially one who would also enjoy and be excellent at presenting this or teaching at the school as well, having been a teacher or presenting it to the teachers. I don't know if she does that kind of thing, but I would think that she'd be real gifted with that. Having been in the classroom, she can give those real-world experiences.
I would suspect that Julie, Yeah, I would suspect that Julie would be delighted to be engaged in something like that. Of course, you'd have to check with her, but having taken the whole body of tools into kindergarten and grade one classrooms for several years and literally saving children's lives with it, and having dealt with academia on the front of presenting it, and then, you know, when Julie was closing out her career and getting ready to retire, the last few years that she taught, she taught in a school where they had two or three kindergarten or grade one classrooms, whichever class she happened to be teaching that particular year, and she would get all of the behavior disordered and the learning disabled kids. And when she went to her principal and said, you know, gee, there are two other classes that some of these kids could be spread around in, why aren't you spreading them around? The response she got was, because when they come out of your classroom, they're not behavior disordered or learning disabled. And basically what she did is simply took these tools and taught them to the children. So she's had lots of experience with the children, and of course that's where her book, Healing Children, Loving Children, comes out. And actually we're just, the book has been edited, and we're just getting ready to send it to the printer. So within just a few weeks, the a new version of Healing Children, Loving Children should be available. And I suspect if you talk to Julie, she'd have lots of input for you and perhaps be willing to engage in the presentations with the school as well to the academic side of how this can benefit and support. And, of course, as well, if the whole team that is the administration and the academic aspect of the school is open to doing their work, they'll create things on a whole other level of success that no other school in the city could possibly imagine having.
That's what I would imagine.
And you know, you've
well.
Got our support 100%, whatever you approach and how you do it. We're always here to support you, totally.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, love and blessings. We appreciate you. Jean, you've got another caller for us?
We do, and I think that it might be Magda. 816, you're on the air.
Hello, 816, you are on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
816.
Either Magda or Chuck, one.
816 is Chuck's number. If that's Chuck at Heartland, you're on the air. Oh, maybe they've turned away from the phone for a minute. Do you have another caller, sweetie?
Well, I did have, but they disappeared off the switchboard. We have the chat room's very quiet today, but we have several people on the switchboard, so if someone presses 1, you're next up with no waiting. Okay, 417, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Well, it's Joanna.
Hi, Joanna.
Are you having a good time?
Welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah.
We are enjoying our time here, yes.
Great. I'm so glad. Let's talk about something that I find was so strong among people, about God being out to get us and punish us.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty common one in the culture of fear.
Uh-huh. And don't dare not believe that the devil is standing there throwing bricks at you, because if you do, you're liable to really make a big boo-boo and sin. I'm finding that very prevalent in the society that I move in. And I'm not too afraid. I'm not too afraid of God. I don't think we're supposed to be afraid of this thing we call God.
Well, I'd agree, and you might look at the regulatory speech aspect, and you know, maybe somebody snuck a little brainwash in there, because when I say I'm not afraid of something, then somewhere in brain cells or something about fear vibrating, and that might be a good worksheet topic to surface another piece of the mind that perhaps has been hidden. But I'm in agreement with you. Our culture has, through fear-based minds, attempted to keep people in fear. I know that, you know, being here in Sweden, we've had several conversations with Peter over the last several months talking about what's called the Janta Law, and that's an unwritten sort of code in the Nordic countries where people are supposed to remain muted and quiet and never shine and never open up. And it's actually very much a message that comes from fear-based so-called Christianity that isn't very Christian at all, but really is about fear. In fact, there's a quote that we have in the front of our Laws of Living course where the Creator is telling humans that fear is taught of the Creator is taught by the commandments of men. And yet we have many who just go right on preaching fear of God and totally ignore that part of the scriptures that they proclaim. Every word is true, but just ignore that one. And, you know, Yeshua came to enlighten us as to some of the errors of our ways. And oftentimes the fear-based mind just carries right along until someone points it out and they become willing to actually love truth enough to look into their errors. You know, one of the Beatitudes speaks of the necessity. It's not a suggestion. It's not a maybe you should do this. It's saying if you want to function fully in touch with what the Creator put into you, you must be willing to look into your errors and thought. You must be willing to change your mind. But that mind that's been pounded by fear is part of the fear brainwash is, ooh, if I ever question, if I ever even think about questioning this dogma, then I'll be torn to shreds. And so questioning is refrained from. And one just carries right along in their error. And anyone who even suggests that you should question it, they become the object of great hostility, the same hostility and fear that was brainwashed into the person who does the attack. So, yeah, it's definitely a big issue and one that most everybody in the culture could benefit from forgiveness work around. And, of course, remembering that when we talk about forgiveness, we're not talking about, if anybody's new to our audience and new to the conversation about forgiveness, we're not talking about how I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. But rather, forgiveness is how I go inside of me and remove my fear-based programming. When I remove my fear-based programming and I love truth enough to let go of that fear-based programming, then I will say to someone who would preach fear of the Creator, you're in error. Stop it. That's not accurate. But then, of course, that means one has to go against an authority that carries such a vicious tongue and a vicious way of acting that most won't ever question that authority. They'll keep right on believing in the fear-based dogma that keeps so many people locked down and out of the truth of who they are. So I certainly agree with you. It's an important piece of work to be done and a difficult one because of the abusive fear-based language that's been used to keep people locked down.
Well, it's a big job, and I think that and that's not where I want to come from in this conversation, but I think in our society that it basically is, if I can find out what's wrong with you, which comes down to gossip, and magnify that, then I cannot find fault within myself. I am superior to you. And I think superiority and inferiority are something that needs to sometimes be addressed, because I don't know that we have to really be superior or inferior. Could we ever just come to a place of neutrality and contentment and peace?
Yeah, I think the only one who has to feel superior is the one who internally has a dissociated mind that feels inferior. And one of the tricks, once you recognize how language and how the mind works, one of the tricks is when I'm looking for what's quote-unquote wrong with everybody else, I'm seeing my own errors projected into my brain's image of them. And if I just take the one piece of advice, and this was a good piece of advice that Paul had, he said, beware you who judge another, for that in which you judge another, you've been guilty of practicing. So when I look at how it's all done with smoke and mirrors, as I'm looking to, you know, find fault in someone else, the fault I will see in another is simply reflective of a fault that I hold within myself and is my opportunity to clean up that fault within me.
So listening to yourself and reading your own feedback can give you direction for forgiveness?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. That's the whole idea of regulatory speech.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that is such a tremendously important thing to be taught, not only from a spiritual point of view, but from a psychological point of view. And if people could begin to see that, what a different world we could live in. So I once again commend you and admire you for your courage to go out and address these things. And I always love your definition of prayer. Could you say that, your definition of prayer?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'll just say that we appreciate you being on our team. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I say we appreciate you being on our team and being part of our family. And in Aramaic, in the Aramaic language, the word prayer, interestingly, literally means to, or more literally means to set a trap for God, which kind of shocks most people at first, because setting a trap for God sounds like some sort of a devious sort of thing. But when you think of it in terms of energy, a prayer, rather than being the act of putting your order into the cosmic gift catalog and telling God what God should be doing for you, what it's really saying is that we as human beings are designed to capture or reflect the active presence of love. You know, as the moon has no light of its own, it is reflective of the sun. And that's why the moon goes through phases, because there are times when the light of the sun is blocked and you only see a partial reflection of the light. And sometimes the moon, though it's there, disappears because there's no light. The earth is blocking the light that reflects off of the moon. So we have the capacity to reflect the active presence of the love of God. And energetically, by capturing that, much like a television antenna, if we're tuned to channel 4, the television antenna captures or traps the frequency of channel 4 if it's aligned properly and we have a good, strong signal, clean picture, clean sound. In exactly the same way, if we as human beings are aligned properly, our physiology is a device that is designed to literally capture and reflect the active presence of love in the world. And that's the real definition of prayer. I remember being a kid and being told, you know, there'll come a time when your whole life will become a prayer. And, you know, as I was taught as a kid, you know, prayer was down on your hands and knees supplicating God. And now when I see it out of a mature mind, understanding the Aramaic, that, yes, literally our whole lives becomes ultimately the reflection of the love of God into the world. And that's our job as humans. When we take that on as our job, first and foremost, the rest becomes secondary. And having that as our primary purpose, that we experience ourselves as that active presence of love and reflective in the world, if we could just get a small percentage of the population of the world shifted into that mindset, how different the game of life would be on planet Earth.
Exactly. I have a young friend who has just returned to Ghana from here. She's a young woman, a black woman, of course, and her name is Yeshua. And she is quite an artist and called me this morning, and as she is there in Ghana, she is coming up against just new, what they are attacking her for, new thought. They feel that she has moved into new thought and is in danger of losing her soul. So she was quite peaceful about it all, and it was an interesting conversation. And this new thought thing is something that is very interesting at this point. And, of course, I don't think anybody ever was more a new thought person than Yeshua himself. Which, comment on that.
Well, it's interesting. Back several years ago, we had the Archbishop of the Syrian Orthodox Church, the Western Archdiocese of the Syrian Orthodox Church, and I was doing a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and he was there, and this topic of new thought came up, and he walked right in. He just put his hand up right in the middle of the conversation. He said, "Excuse me, this isn't new thought. This is the original thought of Yeshua. This is what his Aramaic thinking was about." And, you know, for a lot of people who've developed a theology based in fear and hostility, they don't like that. And, of course, the mind that would attack another rather than stay in prayer is not a mind that is in harmony with God, not a mind that is in harmony with love. One who would threaten and attack another, you know, one of the biggest threats that's used to try to control people is that threat of, you know, the devil's going to get you and you're going to go to hell. The mind who would use that threat instead of function in prayer as the active presence of love is the mind that is in the hugest error of all. But because it's such a bully and it has put people into terror and fear with its threats, oftentimes it's never challenged. And when it is challenged, it just goes literally berserk. Now, Jeannie had an experience. We had she had a direct experience of a few years back of a group of people who, according to her church, were not supposed to be accepted or, you know, brought into the circle of the presence of love. And she had the experience of what the first law, love neighbor, be the space of love for neighbor, meant. And she reflected that back to a preacher that she knew who was very much into a fear-based theology. And this preacher's reflection was to her, his writing back to her was how she was such a, what was the word that was used, Jeannie? I don't remember. You were a... Yeah, that was in the last analysis, the prayer, the so-called prayer was that God would bring her down because it was such an affront to the truth to actually include a person with these attributes in the presence of love, actually having the audacity to follow the first law. And so it's, you know, and here we are working through our non-human states, our own hostilities and fears, griefs, rages and pains, as everybody is, in the best way that we can. And the reminder to me of there'll come a time when our whole lives will be a prayer, that we will totally, completely live as the presence of love in every conversation in our lives, is what's really going to transform the planet and bring forward the truth of who we are. And so your friend Yeshua in Ghana, we certainly extend our hearts to her and hold the space, and that she's able to so powerfully be that space of love that she can transform those critics and open the minds of those critics to see that the presence of love is really what it's all about.
Yes, that's very good. That's a strong message that needs to be repeated, I think, over and over and over until the consciousness of more and more people begin to meet that, meet it and come to it. Well, thank you, and I'm so glad.
Absolutely.
It was delightful to hear your voice, and I hope you're not in the snow yet.
No, actually, it was quite a nice day here. We had sunshine, and a little on the cold side this morning, but it warmed up a little this afternoon, so it's it's been pretty nice, and it looks like the rest of the week is going to be pretty good. And from here on Saturday morning, we move on to Copenhagen, which is a little further south. I've been checking the temperature, and it's 5 or 6 degrees warmer every day there than it has been here. And we're there for several days, and then we head on to Rome, which is about another 15 degrees warmer. So we're heading to warmer climes as the weeks unfold for this tour.
That's marvelous. That's just really marvelous. Well, my support certainly goes with you, and my energy and my love. So I surround you with light and with love and energy.
We accept. So thank you.
Bye. I'll say goodbye.
All right. Blessings. Have a blessed day. We love you. All right. Bye-bye.
Love you.
And Peter has something to share with us, so I'm going to hand him the phone. He's sitting here in the living room with us.
Well, I was sitting here before listening on the Top Gun regulatory speech and kind of smiled on my own conversation from last night. And then sitting in silence, realizing that inner monologue was still going on rampantly. And there was so much food for regulatory speech within my own mind constantly. That was just my feedback.
Yeah, when you recognize that, this carbon-based memory, this memory bank that holds 1,000 generations of conversations wants to jump in and fill the 9-bit mind, wants to fill our awareness with its story and its stuff. And the real work of Yeshua is to clean that mind up. It's a huge task. It's definitely a big piece of work. And it is a process that takes time, it takes energy, it takes commitment, and it's years of work, literally years of work, to get to the point where we can free ourselves from the patterns of generations of thoughts based in hostility, fear, self-deprecation, terror, trauma, and messages of inadequacy and weakness, and return to the truth of who we are. So, Jeannie, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. Do we have any hands up? Anything happening in the chat room to be aware of?
No, the chat room's really quiet, but we do have two hands up. So the first one, I think, is Julie, 417. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Magda.
Oh, hi, Magda.
Well, I didn't get to say goodbye to you before you left, so I'm glad you're having a wonderful time.
We are. Are you back from Hawaii?
I am. I have been back a week, and I'm settled in, and it was great. It was a wonderful surprise party for my brother's birthday. And the reason I'm calling, I know that you have another caller, so I'm going to get to the bottom line here. There are several people who would like to get the new raw recipe book, and I'm wondering if it's gone to print yet.
It has not gone to print yet. We are working on it diligently, along with the 1,000 other projects that we're juggling. Ari and Jeannie spent a huge amount of time with it through the whole Laws of Living process, and there are some finishing touches that Jeannie's putting on it, and then she's going to be passing it over to me, where I'll be adding some other things that Ari and I have discussed, and I'll pass it back to her. It'll be complete and probably be in the printer's hands within the next, I would say, 3 to 4 weeks.
Ah, wonderful. All right. Well, that was what I wanted to know. I will pass that on. I'm very excited about getting that, and several other people are as well. So I'm going to let you get to your other caller and just keep on having a great time. Okay?
Okay. Well, we're planning to do that, and everybody who has ordered the book should have gotten, if it was newly ordered, should have gotten a digital version, so they've got it to work with. And if anyone who has ordered it does not have the digital version, then they could certainly contact us, and we'll make sure that they get that. And then the printed one, as soon as it does get complete. And as I say, Jeannie and Ari spent a lot of time working on and went through each and every recipe. There are over 200 pages now, so it's going to be an event when we get it finished and get it out there. It will certainly be a place for celebration to have it finally in print again.
Yes, yeah, I remember seeing them working diligently.
Right, so
sitting at
call
the table, and I look forward to it, and I will sign off now and send my love, and I'll listen. Okay.
Love you too, Magda.
Area code
607. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Richard. How's everybody doing in Sweden?
Hey, Richard. Good to hear your voice, sir. How do you be?
I'm doing well. Say, listen, I just wanted to mention that I did order the book, and I haven't received the digital version, so I just want to make sure that you guys are aware of that.
Richard, you kind of cut out a little bit there. Did you say you have received it?
I have not received it.
Richard, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay, he's not coming through here.
Richard, I got you, so I will send it to you.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks, and you too.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Blessings. So, Jeannie, is there anything else happening in the chat room, or are there any other hands up in the phone queue? We've got about 3 minutes. We could take another call.
No, nobody else has their hand up, and there's nothing going on in the chat room. So.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about just what is happening, some of our scheduled events. Keep an eye on the website if you happen to be in Stockholm area. We will be posting as soon as we hear from the folks if it comes together for tomorrow night, a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop we're hoping is going to fall in place, some kind of a spur of the moment, last minute notice kind of thing. And then on Friday we'll be doing Why Is This Happening to Me Again here in Sweden. If you want the details of that, it is on our website. Then on Saturday afternoon we'll be in Copenhagen, Denmark, doing the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. We may have a couple of other things that unfold in Copenhagen while we're there. We have a young lady named Paula who's actually the granddaughter of Niels Bohr, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist, and she's sponsoring us there. She's a medical doctor in Copenhagen, and so we're looking forward to getting to present there for the first time. We visited Denmark before, but never presented the work there. So that'll be another new country that we get to open up with the work and carry the vibration to Denmark. And then we'll be heading to Italy. There's a small group forming there. We'll be doing a Y workshop there, as well as in Albufeira, Portugal. And so they're the things that are happening. If you keep an eye on the website, we'll be letting everybody know just what the schedule is. And then when we're back in the U.S., Jeannie will be doing a short time after we're back in the middle of November. I don't have the dates in front of me. Sweetheart, maybe you have them. But Jeannie will be doing a four-day Women Healing Women. It'll be a woman-only healing retreat that she'll be doing. It'll start on a Thursday night and go through the following Sunday. Looks like it's going to be a very powerful event. I know there's still at least a couple of spaces left in that if someone wants to join. It'll be a residential workshop. We'll be doing the Heartland recipes of fresh and raw food, and Lenore is going to be helping with the food program and doing that, so that looks pretty cool. And the only other thing at this point that we have on our schedule, of course, is our summer intensive season next year at Heartland. We're set up to do a 73-day intensive. And so if anybody's interested in taking their process to the next level, you might look at that intensive schedule. Anyone who registers through the radio show, we do have a special offering of 10 DVDs, 10 of our two-hour DVDs that are available as a free gift for anyone who registers for a Heartland Intensive next summer. But if you happen to register through the radio show, then we'll not only give you 10, but all 15 two-hour DVDs as a free gift as part of your registration. And the idea of that is to invite people to go to work with the tools and to really integrate the ideas before the intensive, and that'll just take it all to a new level. And we're down to pretty much the last few seconds in the show, so we appreciate each of you for your participation. We hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Blessings. Bye-bye.